up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, welcome back to Action Giants. That's an honor, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up, wow, up 1475. Futures up 115, NASDAQ Futures up 48. See, down 550, up 115. I'm not so sure that gets you the place, but that's where we're at. Those are the cards we are being dealt, Mr. Weber. We have Kevin with us?
We do.
Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine.
Are you on? Are you online checking
all of our listeners?
Are you online checking your 401ks?
Yeah, just turn them to cash, man.
Yeah,
too late for that, I guess.
Too late. Too late.
Oh well.
It's amazing how many people are going. I won't say going down with the ship, but well, this is my strategy, and everybody, the relentless. Calls from people to not do anything. God, we're talking 20%. I've never seen a day. We talked earlier, a lot this year, Kevin, about how it really turned into a Facebook or a Fang, and then it became a real Dow rally with your Boeing and with your Apple and with your Goldman Sachs. We're leading the charge early in years, and all those three stocks have just gotten taken apart.
I mean, especially if only there had been a dot com bubble somewhere along the line to teach us lessons from somewhere in the past. If only that had ever happened,
yeah.
We probably wouldn't be where we are today.
Well, the whole idea don't worry, it's the buy and hold. All through history, the only people that have ever lost money in the market are the idiots that get out. It's the weak sisters. By the way, it gets on you, and when it takes a long period of time. The fact is, some stuff can get too high, and we have I don't want to go into it because the other stuff we want to talk about, but I mean the Fed is involved when he's blowing up these bubbles, and it all kind of comes together, and markets. Now the question now is, if we turn around and come right back up again, which I don't think doesn't look to me like is going to be the deal, but that doesn't mean it won't be the deal. If we do that, it'll be yet another 3 years from now. What do you mean? You're not one of the chumps that sold out when it was down. Or you're one of the shoe clerks, or you're not, whatever you want to call everybody. Yet people are absolutely frozen. I have all kinds of people that have been calling me, talking about maybe doing something, maybe trying to do something hedged. I'm going to say 1 out of 10 pull the trigger, Kevin. Well, really, you feel like you have an obligation to. Your strategy, you feel like you have an obligation to whatever it is you're doing, and I just don't see it. This is very impersonal to me. When you're a trader for as long as I have, I look at one of Matty Weber's ties, okay? Say it's a Jerry Garcia tie, like the guy was complimenting me on. You know what? If it's a nice one, I'm 20-foot hour bid. If you want it at 60, it's all yours. At 30, I don't care. That's what they cost, right? I like Boeing. I'll buy it at 300. I'll sell it at 400. In the middle, I don't care. That's what you need to do to be a quote investor. Because this idea that you buy AT&T and have a dividend reinvestment program and you have that stock your entire life when you work there, and they treat you well the whole way, that's not the game anymore. The buy and hold is different than what people. If you ask people, Kevin. Name me 10 stocks that you know 10 years from now that are not only going to be still in business, which I think we can all do that, hopefully, although you might have named Sears and United and a few other places.
We'll get to that still in business, yeah, but keep going.
But still be dominant and still be a stock you want to be into, one of your top 10 picks. I challenge anybody to do that list quickly. We did that once on the show. It was about 5 years ago, Manny. And everybody came in with different stuff. I mean, Lou zeroed in on your defense companies. I mean, Boeing's probably still going to be here. You know, Lockheed, you know, those kinds of places. McDonnell Douglas, they're part of Boeing. Those kinds of places are probably still around. And Honeywell, because they've got these government contracts, it'll never go away. They only get bigger. Now, CAF zeroed in on, your Procter & Gamble's places, thinking people are still going to take a bath and wash their clothes, which we hope they do. But, I mean, it's not all that easy to pick, 10 real stocks that are still going to be dominant 10 years from now. I'm not saying we couldn't do it, but it takes a little thought process because a lot of the ones you would have named 10 years ago, not to mention 20 years ago or 30 years ago. The Morgan Stanley Nifty 50, the Kmart's, Polaroid, Eastman Kodak. I mean, these were all stocks you absolutely had to own for the rest of your life and are not even around anymore. So, I mean, investing, it's not like I'm against investing. I'm not. Because, for God's sake, it's my life. It's what I do. But you have to realize that the prices go too far one way and they go too far the other way. And we've gone through a long period of time where the entire strategy is put your money in there, never look at it, pay me 1% a year to do nothing, and not me, by the way, and don't ever sort of hedge. Now, I understand the last 8 years, by having people hedged in my place, cost them money. But I also know that the 10 years before, by having them hedged, made them a lot more money than other people, and they never were tempted to be out because we were never down. Now, the question is, what is the next 10 years going to bring? And we already know what the last 6 months is bringing. We're down 20%. Now, are we going to come back quickly? Are we going to come back? Or are the highs we saw in the market 3 months ago going to be the highs 8 years from now? I mean, I doubt it, but there's been 3 10-year periods like that in my lifetime, Kevin, and yours. I mean, who's to say that the Dow will be 25,000 in, 2020 or 25? Who the hell knows? You hope not, but, there's the amount of debt worldwide piling up. I don't know how we're going to pay it. I mean, when you have an expansion of this magnitude and you come out of it with a federal deficit the same as when you went in, I can't even, you couldn't write a book like that, Kevin. I mean, why are we, what are we doing? Or do these guys know something that we don't know?
No, I don't think they know anything we don't know. I just think that they're so afraid to say no to anything. And, think about that. Think about all the advertising that we just came out of that, the political advertising cycle. And how many people got, they voted against this and they voted against that. Well, it's like saying someone objects to the farm bill.
Yeah.
And the construction of the farm bill. And what's part of the farm bill every time it comes up for renewal? Food stamps, whatever we call them nowadays, because we don't give out the stamps anymore. And what happens to anybody who votes against it or who tries to get in the way of it and get it restructured? Voted against food stamps.
Yep.
What kind of a person is that?
Yep.
So we've become as consumers of politics, we've just become such blithering idiots that we buy into that kind of stuff. And so we're getting exactly what we reward. Gee, doesn't that happen all the time?
But you could, if you were to...
So we can't vote against anything. Nobody has that kind of courage anymore. If we can't vote against anything, what's going to happen to the deficit? It's going to run out of control.
Well, the idea of a company or a country that used to... The companies used to, I'm going to say, take the word and say, take care of their employees in terms of pensions and things like that. All of a sudden, the government says, okay, you don't have to do that anymore. We'll let people take this money out and put it in these 401ks, and they can essentially manage their own pension. So you don't need a Pullman pension fund, a pilot's pension union. You don't need this stuff because people can do it on their own. Essentially says that people, if they do enough, if they are frugal enough at the salaries at the time, because I know, because 15 years ago, I used to get one of these people a month. There'd be a couple that would retire, they'd walk in the office, they'd sit down, they'd say, listen to you on the radio, blah, blah, you seem like a trustworthy guy, which I am, I think. And we've got it. The number was always the same, Kevin. Somewhere between $850 and $1,050,000 is what somebody could save up over 40 years if they were, if they, you know, whatever they put in there, most of the time they might have someone stock, but even with the interest, they had those years where they made a lot of money, of course, that helped out when interest rates were 10%, but by and large, you're making 3, 3.25, 2.75 interest along the way, and if you're in some stocks the right years, you made some money there too. Anyway, that's the deal. So you pile out of that, and you have the house paid for, and that money is going to earn you somewhere between $27,000 and $30,000 in a bank safely. Your Social Security is going to give you 20. So now you've got 55 grand in your paid for house to cover taxes. Buy a new car every 5 or 6 years. Now you don't even need to do that as much. Put the new roof on once in a while. Maybe help some of your kids out. It was an amazing plan, Kevin, for the American dream. I mean, and now all of a sudden, what do you got? Well, we raised the home taxes to the point where even a 55 grand is a problem if you're paying 15 to the state. Now, maybe some places have an old people's exclusion of some kind. I'm not saying some of them don't. They do. But now the 50 grand is 20 grand because in order to put banks back in business, we have to pay zero interest to savers for a decade. What the hell kind of deal is that, Kevin? I mean, how is there not a bloody revolution with these old people that are running down the street with knives and stuff at these politicians? And everybody just takes it. They just takes it. I mean, thank you, sir. May I have another?
With the knee replacement.
Yeah, thank you, sir. May I have another? I mean, how do you put up with that as a population? I mean, I was reading. That's one of the most fascinating things about the Great Depression. I don't know if people were too broke to revolt or what, Kevin. But I mean, anybody who thought in 1935, 36, 37 that the capitalist system or a competitive system, whatever we're supposed to have here, anybody who thought that thing was functioning well to where people were sworn, what do you mean? This is the way we are here. We're competitive. We're capitalist. Kevin, that was no more capitalist than the man in the moon. We had people running essentially slaves in sharecropping. We had people running damn near slaves in the mining industry. Anybody thought? I mean, yet there was no kind of real. The only revolt was elected Roosevelt, for God's sake.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
I mean, you see this stuff. You wonder, well, how are people putting up with it? And so everybody, every person on TV, if you were to say, if they ever had me on CNBC where I told them I didn't want to go anymore, but if I did, I'd say, you know, this bond has been broken. I guarantee you, before I get the words out of my mouth, three of the swinging people would say, well, what do you mean? You're supposed to have your money in the market. The Fed drove you to a higher risk, and if you did what the Fed wanted you to do, put your money in Amazon, not Kmart, not Sears, not Citigroup, but always the ones that are the winners, not the losers. If you put your money in Citigroup, you did way better than 3% in the bank, and it's your own fault for, like, not listening. When all of a sudden, guess what? In a week or two, we're down 20%. We've lost our whole year in the market. Now, where does that argument go? Nowhere, I think. Just saying.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about some of this other stuff. What's going on with the you were outraged when I said the Michigan could jump the Irish if they went out and be three.
Well, I'm not outraged that you said it. I think there's this mindset, and you may be right. They could, because there's this idiotic, I hate to use the word narrative, but there's this narrative that everybody who plays a conference championship has an extra data point. Now, in Michigan's case, they have not played a lower division team, what they used to call 1AA and what they now call the football championship subdivision, FCS. So now they have that. But if you start to look at these schedules, this idea that most of these teams have this 13th data point that Notre Dame doesn't have because it doesn't play in a conference championship. What they're telling us is that Alabama's game against the Citadel last week was a data point. It really told us something about Alabama.
Yeah, I don't know.
Their game against Alabama has games against the Citadel, Louisiana Lafayette and Arkansas State. Clemson's played Furman and Georgia Southern. Georgia has played Austin Peay and Middle Tennessee. Oklahoma played Florida Atlantic. And you're going to tell me that they have 13 data points? I call bologna sausage.
No, what I'm saying is there's this big thing in college football. And a lot of it, tell you what, Kevin, it really makes sense in college basketball. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. Right? I mean the team...
They don't really look at it that way, though. They really kind of look at your whole schedule. I have to say, you look at Alabama's schedule, it is horrendous. Now, it is going to get better with these last couple of games, but every team, not every team, but most teams historically will play one cupcake, usually first game of the year. I've never seen a team play three.
Well, the Irish got three next year, don't they?
Not at that level.
No, not at that. What?
No, they are one of three teams that has never played a 1AA school.
All right, but you guys don't worry about this to me, so I'm
yeah. Know who the other two are, Matt?
I don't.
UCLA and Southern California.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. And I will say, with Chip Kelly there, UCLA is going to come off that list.
Well, I guess my question is, what are the levels now? I mean, what is... You've got.
Think of it as 1A and 1AA, or you can call it FBS for Football Bowl Subdivision and FCS for
right.
Football Championship Subdivision, even though the bowl subdivision now plays a championship.
Well, right below where the Big Ten, Big 12, those conferences are, and I'll put the Irish Nick group, right below that is who?
Oh, you're talking about the Mid-America Conference?
Which is Northern Illinois and Akron and those
so
kinds of people?
You know, Notre Dame has a MAC team on the schedule.
So that's who? Toledo?
So does,
yes.
Right. Michigan, so does Ohio State. But neither of those played a lower division team this year. So credit to them.
Where are guys like Montana State and Utah State and those guys that are, I don't know if they're in the Big 12, but they're obviously, they're teams that recruit and are on somewhat, I would put them above Northern Illinois. BYU and are they?
Oh, Northern Illinois is in the Mid-America Conference. That's a pretty good second tier conference.
All right, is that the best? I guess what's another one? Wasn't the Big Sky or something? Where there was one like that that's out west. That's
well, there here I'll roll through them sort of in alpha order. There is something called the American Athletic Conference that is a lot of those old Big East schools that played football. So you get your Connecticut, and you get Central Florida and South Florida, University of Houston, Memphis. So you get those.
Well, Central Florida and South Florida are getting real.
Well, the Big Ten. Conference USA is another one. Conference USA has teams like Marshall that you'd recognize, Middle Tennessee, Alabama, Birmingham, you know, that kind of group. Mid-American Conference is Buffalo. Buffalo gave us Khalil Mack. But Miami, Ohio, there's a lot of Mid-America quarterbacks out there, Northern Illinois, Western Michigan, et cetera. Mountain West is, that's your Utah State and Boise State and you know, Air Force and Fresno State, you know, that ilk. Pac-12, you know, Southeast Conference, you know. Sun Belt is the last of them, and that has Troy and University of Louisiana Lafayette. So if you were to say what's the lowest in there, probably you'd say Sun Belt and Sun Belt and maybe Conference USA.
So everybody who plays like one or two of those teams, that's like okay, but the Citadel is like lower than that, right, is what you're telling me?
Yeah, then you're going to actually a lower division of football.
Well, I have a quick question since you brought it up. Obviously, Central Florida is going to want to move up one of these years. Where are they going to go? Who's going to take them? Or is it Southern Florida? Which one?
I don't know that they're going to get to move up.
They beat the Irish in the big UFO game, as I recall.
No, that was South Florida.
That's what I said, Central Florida and South Florida, the two of them. They're both good.
Oh, okay.
Central Florida has been really good the last couple of years. South Florida has had some good seasons as well.
Okay.
So they're decent teams, but where are they going to go? You know, does the ACC want to expand? At this point, I don't think so, because if you look at it just from a business standpoint, and you can take the ACC or you can take the Big Ten or any of those, teams that are going to add revenue to your conference. You know, the Big Ten made the move to get to pick up Rutgers, and who they bring on with Rutgers, Mo and Maryland.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. You know, Maryland's probably done them some good for basketball, but I don't think. You know, I don't think Rutgers has added a darn thing to the conference. And they were really, really, you know, focused on the footprint of the conference and kind of staking their claim to that, you know, that part of the East. And that's gone nowhere for them. All Rutgers has done is take up an extra share of bowl revenue and basketball tournament revenue.
I've read an article that said the addition of Nebraska, Rutgers, and Maryland has been a net loss. That all three...
Yeah, I believe it. And I'm sure they expected Nebraska to do big things for them, but Nebraska has not been that good.
Nebraska has... All they've done is worsened educational standards. Their football and basketball has not been good. Rutgers has been horrendous. I think Rutgers has won like one or two games since they've joined the conference. And Maryland, yeah, they've had a couple good basketball seasons, but they don't want to be in the Big Ten for basketball. They want to be in the ACC. And for football, they stink. So it's like... It's been a joke, really.
And Maryland made the move because the Big Ten is such a big revenue generator that they went there because they were operating their athletic department at a deficit, and they couldn't sustain that. So they said, well, as long as we have this chance, let's grab it because we'll get an extra, I don't know, $10-12 million a year. And so they went for it.
Who's the school that's 1,000 miles from the closest?
West Virginia.
West Virginia. And they're in what, the Big 12 or something?
They're in the Big 12.
That's insane. So these other guys, I mean, as...
And West Virginia did that because they were in the Big East, and it was falling apart, and they felt that they better get out ahead of it and grab a spot someplace in a major conference while they could. As it turns out, if West Virginia had been a little patient, it probably would be in the ACC now.
Well, to be perfectly, well, I'll say be blunt, when you look at the, there's a little saloon, not that I've ever been in one, in Michigan City that has all the poster at the end of the year from when the Irish won all the championships in 1948, 49, when Frank Leahy was coaching those guys. I think they were, mm-hmm. was there six games, seven games, eight games? I think near the end of his...
They probably played eight or nine most seasons.
And with no bowl.
They weren't playing 10 yet.
And no bowl. And they never played a bowl.
Bowl games.
So your season's over essentially
last
week.
There weren't that many bowl games in the first place. And they were, you know, they were calling it a deal. I think they went to that Rose Bowl in like 1925 and then said, nah, this gets in the way of school.
Yeah, well, not only that, there
was a quaint thought nowadays, huh?
Yeah. Now it's we also didn't have the travel. It wasn't a big of a TV thing. But your national championship was picked before the Bulls. And that went on to 73, 4?
One of the major polls changed much earlier and waited until after the Bulls. And then another one, because Alabama claims that won the year that... we were in school, and Notre Dame beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl for the championship, and Alabama still lists that one as a national championship for them.
But if you look at the totality, and I like the same comments I have for the market, I like to give the whole story, which is hard to do because nobody knows the whole story. But when Pete on the Nigerian asked me to go out to the year they played, well, Pete Carroll was the coach at Southern Cal. So Jan, or Pete's a buddy of Pete Carroll, because Pete Carroll was a defensive back coach when he was at Minnesota, when Lou Holtz was the head coach. So it's all this sort of an insidious group. And so we go out to I'd never really seen a full team practice before, Kevin, and of course at the time, you know, whatever, I'm 6'3", pretty big guy, and I see everybody come in, and there's these big dudes that are like Samoan guys, so I immediately figured they're the offensive line, which they were. Then there's probably five or six, you know, African-American guys that are 6'3", 6'4", maybe 250. They're all pretty slender, not huge. And I'm thinking, okay, those are the DNs and linebackers, which they were. But I'm going to say out of the 85 people out there, and this may be sounding politically incorrect, there's probably 30 guys that are 6'2", 210-pound, fast, essentially white guys. Now that are... Are not, they're not the top tier. In other words, there's maybe eight guys on that team, 10 guys that are appreciably bigger than me, where you sit there and go, okay, these are the guys that are starting, right? And then there's other guys. I mean, there's going to be 30, 40 people that you have a scholarship to that probably are not really ready to start and play in a major college game. They just didn't grow. They didn't do something. That's the nature of 18 and 19 year old people, right? So my point is, when you drive this revenue wise to this 11, 12 game schedule, it doesn't change the biology. None of these teams, I don't think, has the personnel, no matter who you are, to play 12 really like NFL type games in a row and have the people that'll survive to the end of the year. Am I right or wrong? I mean, you can't do it.
I agree. I think the number of games that they play is abusive when you consider what they don't get paid and that they are they're in that stage of life where they're still maturing physically. And so I think that beating is abusive to especially when they don't get paid for it. But I don't know that there's even a lot of wisdom to doing it for pay at that age.
No.
Because it really is it's going to take a toll, and I think there's something to be said for having a being 25 years old and taking the beating when and think of it as you go to a pro team. What's your work week look like if you're a professional football player? Well, you get to rest a little bit, but you also you work out. You have a 40-hour, 50-hour work week that you can dedicate to football. And so your conditioning is first rate. You have a personal trainer. You have a nutritionist. You have all of those things. They don't have, college. The colleges hire nutritionists, but the young people's eating.
Kevin, hold that thought, buddy.
They tend to suck.
SP Futures up 15. That was up 121. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamale, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Mr. Ben Weber on the board. S&P futures now up 18 and a quarter. Dow futures up 138. NASDAQ futures up 61. It's a lot more fun than yesterday where I couldn't even keep track of. On the breaks, I'm writing down the numbers probably four times. We were sinking on every break. It was butt ugly yesterday morning. It was butt ugly. And it stayed that way pretty much the rest of the day. Although Amazon did come back 100 points during the day at one point. It traded under 1,500, then went back over 1,600. Under 1,400, came back over 1,500, then went back down. Now it's trading 1,525. It's up 29 this morning. DAX up 69.6%. Again, these guys are down 1.5%, and they bounce back half that much. It's better than a dead cat bounce, but it's not a bounce all the way, at least not yet. FTSE up 50.7%, CAC around up 14, only 0.3. Over in Asia, we've got a little bit of a mixed bag here. Nikkei up down 75, 21,507, so they're still kind of down near the lows. Shanghai up a whole 5 points, so that's not helping much, 0.2, 26.51. Hang Seng up 131, 25,971. Again, we've had all that activity in the oil patch. Oil now today up 89 cents to only 54.32, but at least it's a decent bounce of 2%. Brent up 95 cents. Natural gas up another 15 cents. 4.68, in case you haven't noticed or listened to Mr. Weber, it's been cold outside. RBOB 150, up a penny. Home heating oil, $2 exactly. And we've got gold up 260, 12.23. Silver up 13 cents, 14.40. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash this morning, Chief, on the Stevenson outbound just before Cicero Avenue. We have a crash on the exit ramp that's been moved out of the way, so that's good news, but some resulting congestion. Lakeshore Drive out to the Tri-State is up to 38 minutes. Out to I-355 is 48 minutes, so expect some stop-and-go traffic on the outbound Stevenson, which usually isn't the case at this hour, but that's all due to that crash. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Looks like the Eisenhower is nice and quiet. Kennedy and Edens are quiet as well. As you can imagine, a lot of people have the day off today, Thanksgiving Eve, if you will. Expect light traffic volumes, light train volumes as well, and hopefully that continues. One other crash in the area is in the city, Harrison at Jefferson. There's a crash in the middle of the intersection, but no resulting delays from that. Weather today. Partly cloudy skies, 35 degrees, 10 or 12 degrees below normal. We've been below normal in somewhat of a deep freeze here, Chief, for about a month.
Yep.
And it just leads me to believe that we now have six-month summers and six-month winters.
Well, this happened 2 years ago, and we had December was below zero, but then January, February were fine.
So hopefully that's the case. We'll see. But today, partly cloudy, high of just 35, wind chills in the 20s. Right now it's overcast and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 75. That sounds pretty good. Right now it's clear and 49. In sports, the Illinois basketball team was in Maui, and they were blown out by Iowa State, 84-68. Notre Dame topped Duquesne, 67-56. Arizona was also in Maui. They were blown out by Gonzaga, 91-74 in college hoops action. There was no hockey locally. There was no basketball locally. Just college hoops. And then lastly, Mitch Trubisky has a sore shoulder. He's day-to-day and will be a game-time decision for tomorrow's contest on Thanksgiving against the Lions. The team has said if it was a Sunday game, he could probably play, but they might be cautious with him, so we will find out right before game time tomorrow whether Mitch will play. If he does not, it will be Bears backup Chase Daniel, longtime backup quarterback out of Missouri.
Who's that behind him? Anybody?
No idea.
Hey, you're supposed to know all this stuff.
I can look it up. They probably brought somebody
in. He's not on your... Now, are you going to scramble and put this guy in your fantasy?
Oh, God, no. If you're starting Chase Daniel on your fantasy, then you're really bad at fantasy.
So what if he throws for, like, four TDs tomorrow? Then you're gonna be sniveling like a puppy come Monday.
Probably not. I mean, depending on what quarterback you have. If you already have a good quarterback, you're not going to be sniveling. If you don't have somebody... and he throws four touchdowns, then yeah, that would have been a nice play. He will not throw four touchdowns tomorrow, though.
Is there any truth in the rumor that you are in last place?
There is no truth to that. In my one league, I'm in first place, and in my other league that I'm having a horrible season in, I am in 11th place out of 12 teams.
Well, second to last, then.
That would be correct, yes. 11th out of 12.
Is Thomas ahead of you?
Thomas is ahead of me, yes, in that league.
That has to grab you the wrong way.
Yeah, it does. But Thomas is a pretty good player, and usually he and I are both
doesn't matter. He's Thomas.
Top five players in that league. I'm just having a horrible year. I've had injuries and just have I had a bad draft.
So how does the guy pay when he doesn't have any cash and he has no checking account? He only does everything online. Do you guys pay online?
Oh yeah. What do you think? We mail a check?
Well, I don't know.
It's 2018. You Venmo. You get it in 2 seconds.
I thought maybe somebody might actually hand somebody a double sawbuck, and here it is.
Oh, for God's sake. That would be very primitive.
Oh, God. when there is no money and everybody controls everything in your life, you guys will remember the chief saying, you shouldn't have let this happen. Just saying.
I didn't let anything happen. Your guys' generation's the ones in charge.
Well, how are we doing? Not so hot.
You tell me.
Not so hot. You know,
hey, we're having fun though.
Yeah, we're having a regular ride. I'm not going to drive this toward the Oval Office.
This is kind of the George Wendt story of his one and only year at Notre Dame, where he said he kind of flunked out because he missed finals, and the way he explained it to his father was he said, "Well, you see, there was this party, and then we went to Denver."
Well, I'm sure was telling the truth.
Oh, I think it was absolutely true.
George, the character.
You know, we're a fun generation.
Yeah,
you know, we may be totally irresponsible, but we're fun.
Kevin, if you listen to with the market going down this week. Now, again, we've railed, you know, for a long time now this combination of matching up the market with the economy. Okay, which you know you really shouldn't do, especially in this day and age, but. But people do all the time. This is not a shot at the president because I think he just took advantage of it. He wasn't the first guy, but God bless it. If you tell a lie often enough, does it become the truth? I mean, I must have listened to these people yesterday, well, 5 hours I'm listening to them, or six. Every single person genuflected to the altar of the economy. Well, I don't understand what the market's doing. I can't. Why is it going down? I mean, everybody knows the economy is better than ever has been. People are, there's, you know, jobs are coming out the behind, blah, blah, blah. People are doing so much better. The economy, it's never been this strong. Kevin, I'm going to say that for 40 to 50% of the population, they have not exited the recession at all. I think that especially this year with the increase in inflation that they're even telling you about, it's running even faster pass people's raises. I think you can get a job, yes. Is it better than 2009? Yes. But this flowery thing with this economy, it is absolutely not true, Kevin, I think. Which isn't to say that areas...
I'll tell you the one thing that is true, and this is kind of important, is that there are more full-time jobs available and fewer people having to work two jobs.
Yes. Yes. It is somewhat better, but to put the superlative on it is just wrong. It's not a superlative economy. I think in areas like you guys, where you've had some tremendous increase in some of the... with a lot of the cloud stuff and with a lot of the warehousing and those types of things, have left some of the middle cities. And areas like Joliet, where you are, have been big benefactors to this. And there are seriously growing pockets. People used to make $10 an hour, and now they're making 12 or 13 or 14. And you know what, Kevin, that's huge progress. But I'm saying the idea that this is all, you know, nana land for people is just wrong. I mean, it's just wrong. I mean, the personal debt in the last 8 years is up. The debt per family is up $200,000 in the last 8 years. If the world was that good, how could that even be?
Well, I understand that, and part of the problem probably the biggest reason that you see this reported this way all the time is that nobody who's doing the reporting lives in the real world.
Well, that's right. Now, yesterday, I had a dig for one. So with Carl, I read about this 2 years ago when I was a little bit concerned about the dollar-denominated debt coming out of China and other places. It essentially is not going through the normal system. And I'm a big fan of the normal system, not because it's always correct, but at least you can count it, right? The one thing about the Federal Reserve, you might not like their policies, but I'll tell you what, the people that I have an adult beverage with once in a while at least can tell you what's going on and where the money's going, right? If you lose that, I think you lose a lot. So I dug up yesterday and talked with Carl about the $770 billion that are owed to China that don't really go through the central bank. A Chinese company went and got dollar debt, and somebody here sent them a check in dollars, essentially. And they owe it in dollars. Now, as the Chinese currency goes down, servicing that debt gets harder and harder. So you're starting to see some people not paying, okay? Now, we've seen the U.S. government debt go up, 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 to the point where the president now is bleating like a goose that we can't have his interest rates go up because every percent in the interest rate is going to cost the man $210 billion. Well, he's smart enough to realize that's a problem, okay? But the idea that they've been getting zero interest rates for a while is a problem, too. Now, here, the headline on CNBC. There's a $9 trillion corporate debt bomb bubbling in the U.S. economy. Who would have thought, Kevin, that in the last 8 years, when some of these companies have done so damn well, that they would go out and borrow, you know, trillions of dollars to buy their own stock back to give the people, the high end of the company, stock options? It's one thing to give everybody a dividend and spread it around. What could you even imagine in your wildest classes that if you walked out and told your first year students, well, the companies have great balance sheets, but by the way, they're going to go out and borrow money at 3% or 2% because they can. They're going to buy their stock back. And all of a sudden, 5 years later, that interest rate's going to be 6%, and they got this stock that's now 20% lower than where they bought it, and this is a good idea. Kevin, who taught these people? You would think that the corporate balance sheets right now, there wouldn't be nowhere near $9 trillion of corporate debt. Yet there is. Why?
I don't know. Those Harvard educations that so many CEOs have just ain't coming.
By the way, did you catch the Harvard game on Saturday? A little bit of it near the end.
I saw something that also said, "Well, now it was really his index finger," but I don't know. It looked like he was flipping him the bird to me.
Well, you know what? All the shots I saw had the hand. What do you call it when they scramble it? Like if somebody loses their pants, they scramble.
Kind of blur it.
Yeah. Since when can't you see somebody flipping the bird?
God knows we can't have that on television.
No, can't have somebody flipping.
That would be coarse.
Yeah. Remember the, back in Monday Night Football, Matty, way, way, way back in the day, there was a really bad game, and it was Dandy Don and those guys were doing the game. So they showed this guy, and he's in a section all by himself. Somehow he's the only guy sitting there. And he must have been like a NAM guy because he's got the beard, he's got the you know, the knit cap, and he's got the, you know, the green coat that all those guys wore forever. Now, I don't even know if you can buy one of those. They're all camouflage, right? The guy's sitting there. How the hell he knew that the camera came on him, I have no idea. All of a sudden, the guy just flips the bird as strong as you can see right at the camera. And Dandy Dan goes, Howard, I think he thinks his team is number one.
So I'm looking at still shots of it, and it's definitely his index finger.
Okay.
But they had to freeze it to see. I mean, it's very tough to see. The other thing that Chief reported incorrectly is that it cost Harvard the game. Harvard won by like 3 touchdowns, so it didn't cost.
It cost him a touchdown.
It cost him a touchdown. Yeah.
No.
So you know, but it was a big controversy. But
did you know that if you taunted during the play and not after, that they call the play back? I didn't know that.
I did know that. Yeah.
I did know that.
Yep.
Too.
If the taunting happens right before you cross the goal line, it's a 15-yard penalty from the line of scrimmage. It's like the play never happened. But if you do it after the goal line, it's assessed on the kickoff. Touchdown's good.
I did not know that. You guys could have caught me there. But the anyway, Kevin.
Hey, while I have a few minutes here, let's follow up on your discussion yesterday about grocery delivery.
Okay.
Okay. So here's where we're going to go.
Before you start,
make sure you understand the model and why it works and why it's an affordable approach. And this isn't necessarily an Amazon thing, although you know obviously Amazon is a pioneer in it, and everybody else is trying to follow.
By the way, I read your email, and I think you're wrong. But go ahead.
Why do you think I'm wrong? First of all, I would probably better explain what I gave you, and then
we've had people.
I sent you a video,
right? My story was we've had other people try. And where I'm coming from, this originally Amazon was like Warshawski's. They put the system together; it was spectacular. You order something on Amazon, it ships from some other place. Amazon never handles the thing; they charge you whatever, $10, $12, or the other people. For that trade, their variable cost is infinite. Or I mean, their variable profit, because it doesn't. Once you get the system in shape, there's like it doesn't cost you anything for that transaction. You don't handle it. You don't do anything.
The EBITDA version of it is that it's just turning cash.
Yeah, and so and as they've moved forward into other areas, this used to be known, by the way, Kevin, as the wheel of retailing. Is you always start out at the base discount, and as you add more and more services to something, you get more costly, and then somebody else comes in at the base and starts the other end. They call it the wheel. That's an old phrase from grad school marketing. But and my point was, we've had people try and deliver groceries in areas like Chicago, and none of them have done very well. And all of a sudden, Amazon's in the group. Now, I know they have certain skills that other people, except for maybe Walmart, don't have. But then again, I'm going to say, Ken, before you start, it depends on the area. Because you're not going to use the Amazon fulfillment center in Bolingbrook to deliver to me in a central city. That's
they're only in 46 cities in the first place.
Okay.
And yes, you know you definitely have issues like that. And frankly, in any industry that does delivery, that you have some kinds of trucks that can't navigate New York very well, as an example.
Right.
And so you have to set up. Satellite warehouses on the edge of town, and that isn't necessarily even a grocery issue. That's an issue for small parts and the kinds of things that people order and need next day, electrical supplies and things like that. That around here, I could do it, and they'd say we'll drop it by. I could order network cables, and they'd say, well, we'll drop them off this afternoon.
Right.
So it's a different world. However, the difference is that most of the time when you think of grocery delivery, and if you say a Meijer store where they have delivery or you can do pickup, and so you order online, and what do? They send an employee with your order up and down the aisles. So think of this: that they have to stock the aisles, which is an expensive process. Because you have to pay people to do it. You have to keep everything in product order, not just product type, that this is the cereal aisle and this is the soup aisle and this is the condiments aisle and so on. But then everything has to be kept sorted by the type of product, because that's how you and I go to the store and shop. However, in a warehousing environment, you do what's called a random stow, which means that you you will put the next item that you have on the next space on a shelf. It doesn't matter. You can have, you know, a box of Cheerios on shelf, you know, on aisle 26 in your warehouse, shelf number A7, and then you can have another box of Cheerios that's in aisle 57, you know, B22 or something like that for the shelves, because your database keeps track. When you get a pick list, the pick list creates a geographical up and down the aisles type of route for the picker, and it's a much, much less expensive way to maintain your inventory. That's the way, you know, it's the difference between a bookstore and my guys at Better World Books and how they store it.
Except that you don't want a forklift truck picking out your tomato.
No, and there may be, you know, there may be things that people never want to order or buy online, but there are all kinds of foods that you can, and then you say, I'm going to come by the store, I'm going to pick up everything that you got for me, and by the way, I want to pick out my own produce. Or you might find a store where you can trust them to have outstanding produce. I don't know. The point is that there is a whole different approach. If you really want to do it right, there's a whole different approach to warehousing that's not nearly the same as running a retail store.
I would agree.
And you save a lot of money by doing that. And the retail stores haven't made that move. I believe that's why what Walmart is going to do with its Sam's Club properties. You know, I think those are going to turn into distribution sites for online shoppers, and they're going to be very competitive with Amazon. Yesterday, locally, they had an announcement that Martin's grocery stores are being bought by the same group that owns Spartan Stores out of Grand Rapids. They own several chains, but Martin's is a local chain here. It's been here forever. That has probably two dozen stores around Southwest Michigan and in the South Bend area, South Bend, Mishawaka, Elkhart, etc. I think you're seeing a lot of people looking, and that the industry is about to go through another change similar to the one that it did when we went from mom and pop shops to supermarkets.
I would agree, but in every single case, you're not going to, you're still coming way off the infinite product profit model, and in some cases, if it's a mom and pop grocery store in New York City, it's way cheaper to pay mom and pop to bag up the stuff, give it to Yelp to deliver, than you are to buy a warehouse place in New Jersey and try and get that into Manhattan, when you got to pay a toll and everything to get there. I mean, it depends on the area.
And warehouse spacing in space in Manhattan is expensive on its own.
Right, so every place is
getting
different.
It into there, but it's going to work in a lot of places, and I think you're seeing a shift in the model, and that's why some of these stores are going more to joining large groups, because they're not going to be able to afford to set up warehouses just for two dozen stores in Michiana here.
Well, I think you can end up with a middle ground on a lot of this stuff, Kevin. Like you do, like you always end up with. I mean, for me, I don't ever want anybody picking out. I mean, you know, I love to cook. I don't want anybody picking out my vegetables. I'm doing it. And now, if I had two big dogs, and every week, and I had four cats, which I would never be a cat hoarder. But I mean, would I sign up for Walmart to deliver the dog food and the cat litter every 2 weeks? Yeah, I don't want all that crap. I mean, that part I'll get. If they're willing to do that for free, for the same price, knock yourself out. But I mean, I think most people end up with somewhat of a combination. I mean, I would guess.
I think a lot of people will end up with a combination, and a lot of people will, you know, will slowly change over and say, well, you know, this time I think I'll try letting them pick out the meat and the produce. We'll see how it goes. And if they're satisfied with it, then they're going to say, well, I'll give it another try. And, you know, before you know it, now, they may not ever be satisfied with it. And if you're never satisfied with it, then, of course, yeah, you're gonna pass on it. But if you, you know, if they do find out that they can get quality product, maybe that's the way it's going to be.
Well, why,
people that join the... what do you call them? I can't remember the name of them. Where you subscribe and you just get to go pick up your pre-bagged group of vegetables from a fresh vegetables place.
Oh yeah, I know a lot of places are doing that. But the thing of it is, my only jab at Amazon and the people who become, God, some people give them $20 and they work for the place. Kevin, we've been getting our office supply stuff, our paper and everything delivered by Staples for no charge for 20 years. It's not like this is new.
Right, because they have the warehousing technique. But yesterday, when you guys were talking about it, you said, well, how are they going to be, you know, how can they afford to do the delivery at a comparable cost? And I'm telling you how they're going to afford it. They're going to afford it because they're just going to change the model. They're not going to pick from the grocery stores. They're going to pick from warehouses. And it's, you know, that's all part of the, the cold storage industry.
I don't disagree.
Now, if you're looking for investment opportunities, cold storage may be the way to go.
All right, two things. What's going to happen at the Michigan Ohio State game?
I don't know. I'm too biased. I'd get a big kick out of an Ohio State win after all this talk about Michigan passing the Irish. So you know, we have that.
Yeah,
the Irish should. And when they play USC, if they jump on them early, USC will be ready to spit the bit. But that's okay. It's USC week. I'm totally ready to embrace the hate. In fact, I have been embracing it all week.
So if Ohio State wins, does that mean Oklahoma slips in?
Good.
Thanks.
Good. Yeah. Which would be fun because they score a lot of points and they don't stop anybody else from scoring.
All right, Kevin. Take care of yourself. Have a nice Thanksgiving, and I'll let you know if we're on Friday. Depends on Jay-Z. SP right. Futures up 15, Dow Futures up 121. Come back, Mr. Wayne Madsen.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Wayne Matson. Is it Wayne Matson? What is it, Manny?
Wayne Matson Report.
Wayne Matson Report. I know that. I've known Wayne forever. But he changed it way back, didn't he? Was he something else first? I'm not sure about that. Anyway, up 24 on the S&Ps, up 178 on the Dow, 81 on the NASDAQ. We're trying to rally here. So you bought the clothes last night, I assume, Wayne.
Well... I'm what you call a very conservative investor, which is probably diametrically opposed to my political beliefs, but I'm one step short of keeping the money in the mattress.
Well, that's probably worked out for you fine the last few weeks, but I don't know about the last few years. Timing is everything, my friend, as they say.
Right.
We have a little bit of a bounce today. It was the yesterday was one of the strange. All these days, I've seen a lot of down days, Wayne. They're all unique in their own regard. Yesterday, even though we were down, and every single stock in the Dow was down heavy all day. It was definitely a Dow spanking yesterday, and because Amazon was down $80 and came back, and for a while it was up, and then finished down at the end of the day. But the Nasdaq did not have as big a shellacking as the Dow. Now this morning, the Dow is back up, and we got Boeing back up $7. We've got Apple up $2 because Apple was, you know, just been getting beaten up by these suppliers reporting them cutting back on some of the numbers that they've ordered from people. But yesterday you didn't see the VIX really go to the moon. I think everybody felt, you know, and you gotta be careful when you feel this way. Everybody felt that no matter how bad yesterday was, we'd get a little bit of a relief today and Friday because of the holiday. Because that's sort of what we do. We bounce back a little bit. Now, today it looks like we're back, you know, a third of the way. Maybe, you know, now that's, you know, still not so hot, but it's back some. I mean, but everybody was kind of convinced that there was no big rush to where you really felt like buying puts on the close. I mean, I didn't, even though I'm probably a little more bearish than most. I mean, I just thought that would have been the wrong time. They were very pricey. I probably should have bought some calls. I didn't, or a call spread, but, I mean, it was an odd day. I mean, everybody sort of we're still, as the market has sold off, instead of people being afraid to the downside way, they're afraid to get caught with their drawers down when it goes the other way. They're convinced that this president's going to come out and come up with some sort of a story, and we're down 20% in a year in a lot of places, or from the top. And then actually, we're, you know, that in some areas, in the FANGs, we're down 20%, not in the whole market. But everybody's convinced that the mistake here is going to be having him go to this meeting, shake hands, say everything's okay, and we come back half of what we've been down between now and the end of the year, and then you're going to get caught by not being long enough. and I'm going to say that there's probably a real solid chance of that. But boy, if you're wrong, you know, and you've been long this whole way down, and now you're doubling up here, playing the bounce, you could turn your year into a disaster year if you're wrong at this point. I mean, it could.
Well, I'm certainly not an expert on trends, but I do recall from the Watergate days that the market really abhors instability, political instability. You remember, for example, in October 1973, and you're more of an expert on these trends than I am, but October 73, we had a vice president resign. We had the Saturday night massacre, and if I recall, with the oil prices, because there was, you know, instability in the Middle East, that the market was very, very shaky, and ultimately led to some problems for the Republican Party in 1974,
right.
Sort of similar to what we've seen in the last election here, with a huge huge gains for the Democrats at the expense of Republicans. But I have to think that political instability as we see today cannot be healthy for maybe short-term investors are fine with it, but I certainly wouldn't think long-term investors would be happy with, because, you know, how do you, like Yogi Berra said, predicting the future is a pretty risky thing.
Well, I mean, here's what's happening, and it's not like, you know, first of all, I'm no genius, but if you look at this, if you look at history and you look at what we've done in the last 10, 12 years, and you look at the fiasco in 2007, 2008, which was totally different than the Great Depression of 29, okay, totally different. But in this particular case, we decided we're gonna run these interest rates down to zero, which, by the way, they were pretty much down to zero in the Depression as well, but not because anything the Federal Reserve did. There just was no industry. There was no borrowing. There was no need for, I mean, there was no demand for money. We do this thing where we run this balance sheet up, we drive these interest rates down, we essentially screw the savers, we prop these banks back up, and we run an $8 trillion deficit over the last 10 years or something along those lines. And the idea is when we're priming this pump, we're doing something. Now, the people in the 30s, I'm not saying they were brilliant or anything like that. The fear was, if you went into this deficit financing to any huge extent, and if it doesn't work at the end of 5 years, you're still in a depression, the economy still sucks, and oh, by the way, y'all is dough. So during this whole last 8 to 10 years, it's, you know, Maddie and I, well, and all the various guests that have come in, I think have somewhat agreed with me and said, it's not that we're improving, it's are we improving fast enough to make it worth the money we're spending and the debt we're creating. And I'm not so sure. I always thought that the answer was I didn't think so. And now all of a sudden, if the standard line was, if you put your money in the market, it's been a great 10 years. If we correct back to give, you know, a third of that back or a quarter of that back, and you got savers with nothing in the bank as well, I'm not so sure that the pickup in the economy that wouldn't have happened anyway. I'm not so sure the investment that these guys have made, both fiscally and monetarily, I don't think the investment was worth it, right? I think the $200,000 debt on every person's shoulders more than 10 years ago, I don't think we're $200,000 a family better off. We're a little better off. I don't think it's that much. I'll never know the truth here. I mean, somebody will write this history, you know, 50 years after I'm, you know, pushing up daisies, but I don't think it was done. I don't think it was worth the cost. That's my early read. Do you agree or disagree?
You know, I agree. I you know, the other thing I'm looking at too is you mentioned the Depression, and it was, you know, the Depression was shortly followed by you know, wars and rumors of wars. Of course, the rumors of wars, you know, were first, and then we actually had wars. We didn't get into it until 1941, but much of the world had. Was already in, especially in Asia, was already involved in these wars, and now we've got, you know, these leaders like this new crazy neo-Nazi in Brazil, you know, making all kinds of threats, Bolsonaro, and then we've got Trump heading down to Argentina. Obviously, you know, he may be meeting with this president-elect in Brazil. You've got the Argentine president who is an ally of this guy in Brazil. So you look at the hemisphere, then you look at, you know, China and Russia and what's happening in Europe. And, you know, I just figure, you know, like it or not, the world did develop this globalized economy, and now we're, you know, looking at tariffs and sanctions and all kinds of things that we saw all that back in the early 1930s, and ultimately, you know, it led to World War II.
Well, people, for some reason, if you go back certainly to the 30s, when economic times get bad, people will elect these essentially, I don't know if they're right or left wing or wherever they are, but they're dictatorial neo-Nazi kind of people that will tell you that they're going to do, or they could be fascist, whatever you call the guys in Italy or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, they're at least fascist.
Yeah, there's somebody that's going to make, they're going to cut your taxes, I'm not accusing Trump, but the point being is you're willing to give up stuff that you think you used to have, you know, the freedoms and all these other kind, you're willing to give this up to make the economy better. Or, in Germany's case, the law and order in the streets when you had 15 different political parties beating people up at night. I mean, the fact is, Hitler created law and order, right? And then Mussolini made the trains run on time. I mean, people all of a sudden start to make these trade-offs.
Right.
And they're doing right. I mean, I'm going to ask you, I mean, as much as I think that, you know, Trump is not maybe the man for this job. I'm not so sure this Saudi Arabia thing, where you've been somewhat of an ally with these guys, you're sort of dependent on them in oil, even though their share of the world's oil is only 11%. So him congratulating them this morning for saving the world, they increase, you know, I mean, come on, Donald, read the numbers like I just did. I mean, give me a break. We've increased our stuff in the last 6 months more than they have. I mean, who's he? Anyway, but I'm not so sure that all of a sudden one of your allies, a guy you just committed to sell $90 billion worth of your finest military equipment to, now turns out to be essentially a murderer. I'm not so sure. How does Kennedy, how does Roosevelt, how does Lincoln, how does Washington handle that one? I mean, this is a tough
spot.
Well,
you know, look, we had unsavory allies. I think it was FDR that said of one of the banana republic dictators that we had to deal with, I think it was Trujillo in the Dominican Republic, he said, look, I know he's an SOB, but he's our SOB, you know. You know, and as bad as they were, I mean, we've dealt with some pretty unsavory, you know, Saudi kings in the past. But this guy, I mean, really goes far beyond.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
What they did. I mean, chopping up a guy who, for all purposes, he was a green card holder, he was a permanent resident of the United States, working for the Washington Post, living in Northern Virginia. His kids are U.S. citizens, and you know, you get him into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul and hit him with a hypodermic, and then chop him up. I mean, even James Bond's supervillains, arch villains, weren't, you know, that nasty.
No, I mean, as I'm saying, this guy, now, when you were talking about, the first time you came on talking about him, not the first time you came on, you were saying what parts of the family he's excluded, and we talked about, in the guy's one-year run, he's put people in this, you know, in a hotel and basically tortured them for a while. The guy that we liked, who used to give money to all our charities and everything, what's his name, Alawid, he's in there. You know,
yeah.
And all of a sudden,
there was one report that Prince Bandar, you know, Bandar Bush was a short-term guest there.
But I'm saying the dude is on every one of the talk shows. He's a charitable guy here. I mean, who knows where he got them? I mean, whatever. I don't know these people's background. Yeah. All of a sudden, you never hear the guy's name on CNBC or Fox or anybody where he's been guests. It's like the guy never existed. And we put up with it because all of a sudden this new guy, he's got money. We want his dough. And oh, by the way, we need oil from him. We're willing to really stuff our morals in our back pocket and sit on him instead of saying, hey, where's Prince Alawid? He was just on the show last week and now he's being tortured someplace. And we're not even gonna mention it. I mean, and now all of a sudden the guy is, you know, and then you got Trump who says, well, he told me he didn't do it. And then now he's accusing the CIA of screwing up the investigation because they...
Trump certainly believes in what, you know, a lot of the dictators tell him, you know, as Putin denied he interfered with the election, I'm okay with that. You know, Kim Jong-un says he stopped building missiles, I'm okay with that. I mean, you know, this is his club, a club of dictators. And the other thing is, he was willing to give up this Turkish cleric businessman, Fethullah Gulen, who's been living in exile in Pennsylvania. He was willing to give him to the Turkish dictator, Erdogan, to calm things over because of this, you know, the killing of the Saudi journalist, Khashoggi. He's willing to trade in lives, obviously. Now we see that the U.S. intelligence may have known about the plot to kill Khashoggi and failed to warn him of the danger he was facing by going into that consulate. Now, if that was withheld on purpose, Mr. Mueller may be able to increase his brief on the investigation of Trump to possible at least negligent homicide, second degree.
For our guys, although I do have to admit, when you I'm going to say when, if all of a sudden somebody plunked us in the Oval Office, boy, that would be a problem. When you start, the issue of moral relativism would come to mind, because these other guys don't go to the beat of a different drummer. But I don't know that I could ever give mine up to that extent, where I don't warn some guy they're gonna cut him in half.
Yeah, we're you know, that's not the look. We the history of the United States. There's not a lot we can point to and say, look, we're a great example. But I don't think many people if given the chance to live in the United States or a country like Honduras, which is effectively a dictatorship where there's death squads and you know, extrajudicial executions taking place on a daily basis of journalists, priests, politicians, labor union leaders, I think they would opt for the United States. But more and more we see, especially with this New York Times revelation, and that's probably as the result of some guys that were in the White House are coming out with books. You know, it's Christmas time. It's time you could come out with your tell-all books, increase sales. But this idea of, he wanted the Justice Department to criminally prosecute Hillary Clinton and James Comey, based on what? That, he didn't like them? Now we're getting beyond Nixon, because Nixon was a lawyer, he was a congressman, he was a U.S. senator, and he was a vice president. He knew he was violating the law and the Constitution, and a lot of things he threatened he never even went through with, because I think he realized, what would happen if he got caught. And he was caught, and he was going to be impeached and convicted and thrown out of office. Trump, on the other hand, doesn't have any appreciation for the law. You look at his career, he has done everything to go beyond the law, stay out of trouble. The casino business in New Jersey, he was dealing with the mob. So essentially we have a guy who looks at the law and the Constitution and says, so what?
Well, I'm gonna say, unfortunately, Wayne, in my years in the securities industry, and my years in I'm obviously doing the show and so forth, and reading more than any person should regarding this stuff. I mean, you do it because you have a thing, but I do it because I do this for my clients and so forth. But it is appalling to me, kind of where we've headed in my generation. I'm going to say that. If you took the opposite approach, that if you're not cheating, you're not trying, I'm going to say virtually all those guys did better than the people who played it straight that I knew of, both in the securities industry. I'm saying these firms, when I started, it was an auction market. Everybody loved the idea that every person was competitive and nobody was better than anybody else. Anybody could walk in any crowd, start trading, anybody could do. Nobody owned a spot. all you had to do was be good, you could walk in. Now, of course, anytime people are someplace, it takes you a while to break into anything. I understand it was never that smoothly, but if there were 10 guys standing there, the 11th guy wasn't the most welcome guy the first day. I get that part. I mean, all people are. But the fact is, 3 weeks later, there's 11 guys in there, right? It's not, but the fact is, people that learned how to intercept the order in the booths, people that learned how to front run some stuff, how to do some stuff, they did way better. And you know what? You know, Wayne, they were never spanked to any degree where they stopped it.
Right.
Ever.
Right. No, I know exactly what you mean. I once interviewed for a job in Wall Street with a firm, you'll be well aware of, Drexel Burnham Lambert. One of the best decisions I ever made was not taking that job.
Yeah, well.
You know, and I once interviewed with Arthur Anderson, the, you know, white shoe firm, it was in Chicago.
Yep.
And I had a funny feeling they were, you know, not my cup of tea either, so... Yeah, you're right, though, that the people who were, you know, skirting the edges of what's legal, what's ethical, did make out. Some got caught. but
in our industry, every single stock trade, matter of fact, I was talking to some people the other night over an adult beverage regarding where the industry is going on the stock side, and we had Kenny Pulcheri on the air yesterday. I mean, what percentage of trades now are done with... In my day, when the 1973, when the CBOE was put together, the story was everything was being auction market, every order was exposed to the auction, fast or slow, depending on the system, was exposed to the auction, everybody had a chance to trade it. Right now, every single order, not every single one, because like the ones at night and the ones in the morning still are there on stock exchange, every single order is preference to somebody. Nobody sees it, and somebody gets a trade ahead of somebody else. The entire industry, the entire moral fabric. I know there's algorithms and there's fast computers, and I know all that BS. The fact is, it's designed on preferencing and kickback right now. And that was exactly verboten in 1973. And now in the next 50 years, the same firms, that when they saw market makers making some money and them not controlling an industry, I'll say one thing for them, Wayne. They started this push toward being in control in 1985, and I never thought they'd get there, but they have. They are relentless. That's why this corporate stuff. People think, "What are you talking about? They're never going to get any place." They get there. Always to the disadvantage of somebody who's not as powerful and doesn't have their edge in Washington. I mean, that's my view of the world because I've seen it. I mean, now every single order will go someplace in a black hole. Nobody knows who's trading with. It's preference. Someplace, and somebody gets a kickback for it, and yet you have.
Well, right, you're right. One of the most memorable lines in a movie was the Wall Street 2 with Michael Douglas, where he's let out of jail after I don't know how many years for insider trading, all the things they put him away for, and he's talking to class, and he says, you know, what they put me away for years ago is now legal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you watch, and I'm not beating up on a firm. Well, I guess I will. You watch the Charles Schwab commercials, and you have a firm like we do, PTI, that we don't take kickbacks, okay? Now, you have a firm like Schwab saying, well, gee, if you don't like your trade, we'll give you your commission back. And I'm like, well, that's special, because the commission is probably a third of the money they make. They're not going to give you the kickback back.
Yeah.
So how does the SEC, knowing that Schwab is going to get two-thirds of their money from essentially kickbacks that used to be illicit. Thank you, Bernie Madoff. He's the one who started them. That how do they let people run a commercial like that?
Yeah.
Saying that all the other firms are crooked that don't take them. It's exactly the opposite, right. The message. But yet...
I covered the Bernie Madoff trial in New York, and I'll tell you, I heard a term there that I had never heard before. I talked to one of his personal assistant, who was actually there at Foley Square, the federal courthouse today. He got sentenced to life imprisonment, but his personal assistant said, yeah, Bernie would always tell me, look, go over to Citibank and get me an inch of 50s. This was on a Friday. This was his walking around money for the weekend. An inch of 50s is $5,000.
Yep.
I've never heard that term used. If I get a $50 bill, it's like, wow. Most
of the guys with the Harris Bank and the Wait, well, I tell you, if you want to see a bunch of Jeffersons or Benjamins going out the door, it was the Harris Bank branch in the Board of Trade building. I mean, especially before the holidays, Every guy's getting, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in hundreds for all the various clerks and the whole bit for everybody. I mean, you know, a little Christmas present here and there, and you know, and of course the exchanges are trying to tell people, geez, you can't give people any kind of a gift or anything. And like, give me a break. I mean, the people who were the quote reporters, they helped you out if they got you a trade a day. When I say got you a trade, if they saw you were bidding and they liked you and they found somebody on the other side of the pit that was offering and matched that trade up, some of these guys are worth $500 a day to you just by doing their job, and they're making like minimum wage. And you're not supposed to give the guy $100 for Christmas? I mean, come on. I mean, hopefully the world never gets that bad. Wait. It wasn't like you were paying the guy off to, you're just realizing that if they did their job well, how much it was worth it to you. And making sure that if I was quarter bid and there was a guy quarter offer, they would find the guy who was quarter offer. They would help you out. We're talking 350 people in a pit. So, the world can be, but going forward here, I really hope, I can't even begin to go down the road and say, that Maxine Waters is now my girl for banking. When she says regulation, does she even know what she's talking about? There needs to be more regulation? More what?
Well, she's been on that committee a long time. I have to think that she has to know something about what she's doing. Now, the downside is I understood that her husband was involved in a bank, and it wasn't completely on the up and up. This was a bank out in Los Angeles, and I don't know if the bank is still in business or not. So that's not the kind of experience you want to bring to the chairmanship of the Financial Services Committee, but obviously she...
Hey, Wayne, how about holding that thought, buddy? We got to go to break. SP Futures up 22.75. We'll give the full report when we come back. I'm Tom Howie's Wayne Matson. Matt Weber will be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howie, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom, Mr. Wayne Manson and Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 21, Dow futures up 151, NASDAQ up 72, so we're continuing our bounce back. We were up as high as 25. Durable goods orders just came out. They fell 4.4% in October versus 2.5% drop. Now these guys are can be very volatile because of transportation stuff. I'll get more on that number in a minute, but around the rest of the world, you know, the economy is somehow or another, and I don't know why, has hit a little bit of a wall the last month or two, and maybe
I'm telling you, man, my company laid off 50 people last week, and
it's... Manny, does anybody know why? Where did you see it first? I mean, where did you guys?
I don't know. I'm telling you, my customers are all in spending freezes. My company laid off 50 people last week. If you think it's all roses out there, it's not. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's anywhere, you know, as bad as it was in 2009, but it's not all roses out there.
Could you put your finger on a date when this all started?
I don't know. I would say in the last 6 months.
All right.
And I don't know why, but yeah, you could feel it change.
Well, the mortgage stuff with the is going crazy with the interest rates, because we were down to like what an 8-year low, and then home refinancings and so forth. Hey, what you do is traffic, weather, sports. And so I just lost my pager because our computers are down for a second.
I can do that, and it'll be a quick one because traffic is very light this morning, as you might imagine. A lot of people took the day off today and started their Thanksgiving a little early, and the expressways are proving it. No issues at all on the Edens or Kennedy, even the Eisenhower and Stevenson, although, you know, there's certainly traffic there, but nothing like normal for this time of morning on a Wednesday. Southside expressways are very quiet. We did have an earlier crash on the outbound Stevenson at Cicero, but that's all clear now. Everything else is looking good out there. There's one sort of traffic alert, and it's not that big of a deal. There was a stalled CTA bus on Lakeshore Drive southbound just before Fullerton that was causing a little bit of a delay as folks navigated around that, but nothing of major note this morning, which is good news. Now to the bad news is our weather continues to suck.
Yes.
Partly cloudy skies, 35 degrees, that's 11 degrees below normal, wind chills in the low 20s, and it's going to be overcast, and then we'll maybe get a little bit of sunshine later on this afternoon, but we'll be in the low to mid 30s all day with wind chills in the low 20s, so it'll feel like January like it has all of November. Right now it's cloudy and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 75, we'd much rather be there today. Right now it's clear and 50. In sports, quiet night last night for the pro teams. Obviously, no football last night. Bulls, Suns, Blackhawks, and Coyotes were all off as well. There was college hoops, though. Notre Dame beat Duquesne 67-56. Illinois was blown out by Iowa State 84-68. And Arizona, in a battle with number 3 Gonzaga, was blown out as well. They lost 91-74. Chief.
We got the DAX up 116. That's a full 1%. FTSE up 78, 1.1%. CAC around up 28.6. So Europe's bouncing back probably a little more toward the losses yesterday than we are. Nikkei down 75.3%, so there's no bounce there. Shanghai up 5 points. That's not much either, 0.2%. Hang Seng up 131.5%. We've got oil. Now, this is a dead cat bounce, Manny, where we go from 72 to 53. We're back to 54.76. So it's a bounce up, but it's not much of one. Brent, same thing, up 133, 63.86. I'm going to say 8 weeks ago, Brent was threatening to go to 100. Now it's 63. That's unbelievable. Natural gas up another 13 cents, 465, reflecting the cold weather. RBOB 152, that's up 2 cents. Home heating oil, almost $2 exactly. And we've got gold at a little bit of a rally this morning, up 450. Silver up 17 cents. That's a little bit of a bounce there. I was going to say, what do you got for us, Trevor, weather sports? But you already did that, so we won't have to do that. Wayne, how are you?
Very good.
So with us, buddy.
I'm here in Tampa, where it will be 81 today, so we beat Phoenix.
Very nice. Yeah.
This is the earliest end, I think, in history to Sunday morning softball, because we will play up till Thanksgiving if it's anywhere over 45 or 50 degrees, and we have not played, Wayne, in 7 weeks. It's never happened. There's been a couple of cold days, and you played the next week. We've never been skunked for the last 6 weeks of the season ever. And now this year, no softball. This is bull, I say.
We've had plenty of cold days in November, obviously, in our lives. That's not that big of a deal. But for it to consistently, for 3 or 4 weeks in a row, never get above like 38, it's really weird.
Yeah, it is. Those are January numbers.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's where we are. Wayne, a lot of stuff still to talk about. Here's a question for you. What are we going to do we now have two public enemies in the country we never knew we had. One is the reporters, which I guess I got to count you in there.
I hate those damn reporters.
I hate those damn guys. And the second is the Fed. And first of all, when you start talking about interest rates, if you're talking about tomorrow and short-term rates and pulling money out of the system and adding money to the system, can the Fed influence the interest rates and to the extent control them? I'm going to say the answer is 75% yes. But when you have inflation numbers that are higher than advertised, shall we say, there's one thing that nobody, I haven't heard this formula in 10 years, Wayne, but your interest rates, your long-term interest rates, over a year, over 6 months for that matter, over a year are composed of two things. There's a real rate of interest, and there's the implied inflation rate. So if I loan you money for a year, there's a rate I'm willing to pay you, or we negotiate. And in history, that's been 2.5%, 3%, 2.75%, which is the real rate of interest. In the Stone Age, you lent the guy 100 stones, you want him to bring you back 103 at the end of the year. I mean, it's just, there's a price to using other people's capital. Okay? And you add to that, what's the inflation rate? Oh, wait a minute, I'm lending you $100, but at the end of the year, because of our central bank, that $100 is only going to be worth 90. So I want that 10 back, and I want the 2 or 3 on top of that, right? So the Fed in some ways controls things. But I don't think right now, even though Trump is, bleating like a bazoo, I don't think that the Fed is capable right now, no matter how much money they pour in the system. You and I and Matt Weber and Matt's lovely significant other and my lovely significant other and anybody we know is not going to give these guys money for 10 years for less than 2% right now when they see what is happening inflation-wise. And I'm not saying we should bitch about whether it's 2%, 2.5%, 3%, 1.5%. The fact is there is some. And I don't think right now anybody's giving anybody dough for less than 2%. And that's a market moving activity. It has nothing to do with the Fed. If people,
before the break, you asked me about Maxine Waters as chairperson of the House Financial Services Committee. I've known her for almost 20 years now. And one thing I do know about Maxine is she will be very, very tough on predatory lending institutions and practices, because if you know what her district is, which is South Central Los Angeles, they've been plagued by some of this. So that's one thing I would say, and no pun intended, you can take to the bank. She is going to be very tough on these outfits with the refinancing and grabbing VA mortgages and all that stuff. You see some of their ads on TV.
All right, now, if she was on here, the show, and if I didn't like her, and I'm going to say I probably would like her. I like pretty much everybody. I'm going to say, how the hell can you even think about doing that when the normal person has a credit card rate of 20%? You're walking right by the elephant in the room to find some esoteric refinancer in your district.
What? I think she's going to be going after more of the mortgage refinancing people and that type of thing. Now, she's going to be tough across the board, but I think it's especially, for the elderly, for minority groups that are preyed upon by some of these mortgage refinancers. I think she's going to be a very tough on them. The credit card stuff, you know, I don't know what you do about that. I mean, she can hold hearings, and I imagine she will, but other than complaining, I don't think there's much, you know, the House committee can do about it.
How about a usury law?
Well, I think there's another situation she's going to be. Yeah, she's going to hold a lot of hearings, and where, you know, especially what Trump has done with this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that Mick Mulvaney, the OMB director, is wearing a dual hat. I think she's going to be hauling him before her committee. I would not want to be him right now, or at least in January.
but Wayne, I guess I could be an amazing arch-conservative when it comes to government doing all this stuff. By the way, did I ever ask you about the chief's, instead of the trickle-down theory, which I don't think works, I have my new three-point trickle-up theory that I think would help the economy way more than the trickle-down theory. You want to hear it?
Sure.
I'm going to say the ridiculously stupid law that says if you lose money on stocks, you can only take off $3,000 a year. Raise that to like 50, okay, or 100. Have a usury law on credit cards of 12%. If you can't steal enough money from somebody at 12%, or something like, yeah, or something like 9% above the risk free rate, or something, or even 15 or 14, not 24, not 22, and yeah. I'd find a way to lower people's student loan interest from 6.5% or whatever most people are paying down to 5.5. I'm going to say those three things. Put more money in the right people's hands and get in the economy way faster than giving Trump and his buddies a tax decrease.
Yeah. Oh, I think you'll see Maxine probably hold hearings, if not introduce legislation in at least some of those areas, especially the student debt, because that's such a drag right now on a lot of people just starting out.
Well, the little known, and I just, because I know you talked to a lot of people, when you see what's happened to the market and you say, well, why are you, meaning me, so pissed off that the Fed essentially blew up the assets and now they're coming back down again? Why should that be a problem? The stock was 60, it went to 100, it's back to 60. Because, Wayne, it's not even. Because you lose more money on the way down and people making the way up. And if I buy a stock at 60 and sell it to you at 100 and it goes back to 60, I have to pay taxes on $40, okay? Which, you know, the total capital gain. You just lost $40. You can only take off $3,000 a year. So it's not an even game. One of the reasons why when the dot-bomb things collapsed, that Clinton had all these surplus taxes, was the people who sold out at the top had to pay all these capital gains things, and the people who bought at the top and basically got their ass kicked are still taking off $3,000 a year. It's a totally unfair game in terms of taxes. And for what reason? I mean, why shouldn't that number be 50 or 100 or 200?
Yeah.
I don't even think you...
Well, I think you're going to see some movement in the House on a lot of these areas. The committee which is mandated to investigate government abuse is the Government Oversight Committee, which is going to be chaired now by Elijah Cummings from Maryland. And there was some very heated debates when he was ranking member between him and Darrell Issa, who was the chairman. And then that was taken over by Trey Gowdy. I mean, people say, well, you know, the Democrats, if they all they do is hold hearings and you know, they're not going to deliver the goods on the health care issues and all. I believe they're going to do a lot of things. Pelosi said, look, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. But the oversight has been severely lacking on
this
administration. So I think those committees that have direct oversight will, you know, carry out their mandate.
Well, Wayne, I don't disagree, and I'm not, because you know these people better than I do, but I'm gonna make a prediction. Maddie, you put this down. None of this crap is going to happen. When 4 years from now or 6 years from now, you're still going to have. I mean, this is part of the inflation stuff. When I got a credit card, I'm going to say 15 years ago at U.S. Bank. All right, I went online and I said, okay, who's got the cheapest interest? Not that I never kept a balance, but I said, in case I ever need one, I got one for 7.5%. Just for laughs, last week, because I'm digging into this inflation numbers more than I should, I went back online, lowest interest rates credit card. Guess what the lowest one out there is that I could find online? It doesn't mean there isn't one someplace. Guess the lowest one I could find.
I don't know. I pay mine off. So.
Okay, well, okay. 13.9. So it's essentially doubled in 12 years. So let me get this straight. We're giving banks money for zero, and we're letting the banks turn around and charge our populace 14%, and that's okay. There's no way on earth that this group rises up, Democrats, Republicans, whoever they are, with all these checks in their back pocket, this group rises up and says, hey, banks, 15% is the top. If you can't make money there, you're like really bad. Get out of the business. It's not going to happen, Wayne. And yet, I mean, do you see it happening any day soon?
No, and I've always said something about the two senators and one member of Congress from Delaware. Right now, they're Democrats. And Joe Biden used to be one of them senators. You're not going to get much by them on going after the credit card industry, because where are they headquartered? They are in Wilmington, Delaware.
Yep.
They protect that industry like you wouldn't believe. And, you know, Joe Biden can sound like he's, you know, one of the guys all day long, but when it came to regulating the credit card industry, he knew where his bread was buttered.
Well, I got another quick one for you. Maddie Weber, if you saw yesterday, is Walmart, I'm sorry, Walgreens, Maddie, check this out. They're in talks with Humana. If these guys, Democrat, Republican, whoever you are, if you let that one go through, they can talk all they want, Wayne. They don't do anything. The answer to that is no. Pick up the phone, tell them, don't even talk. Don't waste your time or ours. But that's not going to happen either. Do you really want the hospitals, the insurance companies, the pharmacy benefit managers, and the hospitals all be in the same place? Does anybody want that kind of vertical integration? Yet it happens on a monthly basis, it seems. Then at the end of the day, when they're charging God knows what for everything, I mean, there's going to be 3 or 4 hospital groups left in Chicago. There's going to be 3 insurance companies left, and maybe 2 pharmacies. Does anybody think that's a good idea? Does anybody have the stones to stop it? It's not going to be Trump. It's not going to be Maxine Waters. Is there a Solomon any place? I'm thinking no.
Yeah, I've been looking into a recent case in Washington where we probably had one of the few examples where somebody in the Trump administration was actually qualified at their job. It was the guy who was the drug pricing czar for Health and Human Services, a guy named Dan Best. He'd been hired out of CVS Caremark. He had worked for Pfizer, but he was in charge of, you know, negotiating prices for pharmaceuticals. So he's brought in by Alex Azar, the HHS secretary from CVS. He's actually was able to bring down Medicare drug pricing, and on November the 1st, he lived in Southeast Washington near the Navy Yard, and he was found unresponsive, they said, at the garage to his apartment building, 5:35 a.m. They called EMS. They declared him dead on the scene. The office of the medical examiner in D.C. concluded that he died from multiple blunt force blows to his body, and then ruled that suicide. So here the guy, you know, beat himself to death.
Manny, could you do that? Could you beat yourself to death?
No, but I've seen Fight Club, and it can be done.
Really?
But, you know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, here's a guy who was actually, you know, able to limit some of the price gouging by the pharmaceuticals. He knew the industry came out of it. And they said, you know, well, here, 49 years old, left, you know, wife and three sons. You know, it's one of those, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to buy that. And I've investigated quite a few so-called suicides in D.C. and surrounding areas, and I can say that this one, even with some other suspicious ones, this one really takes the cake.
We're getting into a spot. Did you ever read a book, it wasn't a romance thing, Harlequin? Way back in the day, my mom had it, so I read the darn thing. It wasn't like a romance, but it was a guy who, it was a novel about somebody who had a firm, and he had, you know, he was a pretty serious guy, and they had all this stuff, and this outfit wanted to buy him, and they wanted to pay him money, you know, more than the stock price, and he essentially said no, but they really wanted him, and they kept pushing until finally, you know, there was a shooting and his wife got killed, not him, but it's turned into this big, you know, fiasco. And I'm thinking at some point, and I hope I'm, you know, hope I'm not here when that day happens, Wayne, but these guys are going to get so big that if somebody actually does have the stones as president to take on one of these pharmaceutical companies, pharmaceutical slash hospital slash somebody that you think and you can prove have been, you know, basically ripping people off the whole way, you're going to have to show up, I honestly believe, with a SWAT team. Because these guys, you're not going to be able to do it by two people from the FBI showing up.
Right.
Because the power these people have and their ability to hire, we're talking about people that can hire their own armies, for God's sake. I mean, we're getting to that stage. We let these people get that big.
These vested interests, I mean, look, tomorrow is, you know, November 22nd. And, you know, we know what happens to presidents who try to take on powers that are well beyond their, you know, their capability to take on, whether it's an intelligence agency or a major corporation.
But I honestly don't want, and like you say, talk about somebody who got shot on the 22nd. I would like a president that when there's a meeting of all these people, that he's not the buffoon in the room. And I'm not talking about this particular guy. I mean, I don't want him to be.
We're going to have to wait at least two more years.
Well, but I'm saying I actually kind of like George Bush, but I mean, when he sat there with the heads of the seven oil companies, I mean, I'm thinking there's no doubt who was the lightweight in the room. I'm not saying he's a bad guy or bad president or anything like that, but somewhere along the line, we need.
I'll say it. If you're talking about W, I'll say it for you.
Okay.
He's a horrible president.
Right, but my point is.
Well, they probably said, hey, and Mr. President, did you have an oil company? What was the name of that? Oh, that was Arbusto. That did well, right?
Yeah.
Well, whatever you think of, you know, John Kennedy and his, the guy was that sick and still he was messing with girls every day. I mean, at one party you might say, God, what a stud. But the other point is, I've read stuff where they said every time somebody would come in from whatever industry they was, he would have somebody on his staff dig up all the, you know, what's going on with that industry, blah blah blah, and he would prepare himself for the meeting. And that the guy was putting these tapes together, and they're all scratchy and everything from the 60s.
Yeah,
said he was stunned that after the man was 6 months in office, no matter what the industry was, after the 10 minutes into the conversation, he was the smartest guy in the room. Because of preparation.
That's, you know, presidents who have been successful have, you know, been that way. I mean, we've had, unfortunately, we've had a lot of examples that were the opposite. I mean, Gerald Ford was considered a dunce, and he really was. He didn't really know a lot. I mean, he'd been, you know, House minority leader, and he knew a lot about the industries because he was taking money from them, and that's all he knew about them. But But a guy like Kennedy, Johnson, for all of his ills, did know, you know, pretty well knew who he was messing over when he, you know, went after an industry, whether it was the steel industry or the coal industry. He, you know, he was kind of that kind of, he was that kind of politician. I say he did some bad things too, but he did know the industries. That's just good staffing. That's good. That's being a good, I guess, executive. When you talk about the chief executive, I think this is Trump's problem. He thinks he's the chief, but he doesn't know how to be the executive. I mean, he never was responsible in the Trump organization to a board of directors,
right,
except his own cronies. It wasn't publicly traded. There was no audit, you know, outside audit committee or anything. I mean, it was all inside baseball for him. So,
well, yeah,
he never
with
really
the process,
wanted to hear bad news and probably never received any.
How we only got 10, SP Futures up 22. How's this process? You come back, Wayne. How's this process going to give us a Solomon? I don't see it. I mean, thanks, buddy. Have a happy Thanksgiving. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We think we're back Friday, but we'll see. We haven't figured it out yet. We'll come to the website. We'll let you know.
When you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.